We're back with another episode of The Conversation, hosted by myself, Alexis Nunez, and Shaka Hislop. This week, we keep the conversation and the girl power going with England international and former Arsenal, Chelsea, and Orlando Pride star, Leanne Sanderson. And we're back with a fresh edition of The Conversation. Absolute pleasure to have the one, the only Leanne Sanderson joining me and Shaka. Leanne, I mean, you're someone that we've definitely wanted to talk to for some time now, given the fact that you would know our audiences in the US so well at ESPN, but then of course you're a child of here, of England, where I am at right now, and with Jamaican parentage too, so even better. And just to continue this conversation, because as Shaka and I keep saying, We've reached a point where we no longer want racism or the fight against racism to just be a flavor of the month, to just be something that you put up for 1 or 2 months, or see players taking the knee for 1 or 2 months, and then after we're back to square one, you know, until something else tragic happens. But for you, I guess let's just start with taking it back to summer 2020. You know, 2020 was a difficult year for all of us with the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, but I still think it was such a monumental year in terms of this fight against racism. Unfortunately, all of it started with the tragedies that we saw with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, just amongst others. You, I believe, were in the States when that happened, were you?
Yeah, first and foremost, I'd just love to say thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure of mine to be on the show. Yeah. And I've lived in America now for 10 years, apart from when I signed for Juventus in Italy. And it was a terrible time. And I think it didn't matter where you was in the world, it affected everybody for many different reasons. And, you know, growing up, my dad's black, my mum's white, I grew up in a fantastic family. And it's something, you know, I've had to deal with my whole life, whether it be you're followed around the shop because of the color of your skin, or you're going out somewhere having to feel like you have to wear nicer clothes because you don't want to be judged. And that's something that you didn't even realize you even did until all these things were brought to fruition. So it's almost like I used to say to my dad when I was younger, Dad, why are they following us around this shop? And he used to never tell me the reason. But as I got older and I started to get followed around the shop, I then understood. And it's one of those things where you kind of live with and you're thinking, that's not okay to be judged by the color of your skin or your gender or your sexuality. So with regards to what happened in 2020, I think, which obviously wasn't that long ago, I think it made everybody else wake up and realize what we've been going through our whole lives. And I think a lot of people didn't realize how in depth it affects them, because it's something we don't necessarily talk about all the time. The fact that we're on this show talking about it, yes, it's not a nice conversation, but it's important. And it's also very inspirational to be able to talk to, you know, fellow people of color about this subject, because it's something that we don't necessarily feel like we can speak about. And I think with regards to George Floyd and what happened to him and the murdering of George Floyd, it's amazing to me to see the amount of people that have woken up since then. I'm not quite sure why it's taken that to happen, but I've had messages from people with regards to what happened with myself and Ennio Raluca at the Football Association, and from former teammates that have actually said, you know, we didn't realize how in depth this meant and what it meant to you. And it was a bit strange to me to receive messages 4 years later after something that happened with a manager that had been proven that he was racist in what he said. And now 4 years later, it's taken the murdering of George Floyd for some people to wake up and see, you know, I couldn't really understand the correlation between the two. And I'll take the apology, but I'm not really sure why now people have woken up finally.
Yeah, that's a thing for me, Leanne. I so agree with everything you said. And you said a lot. And you talk about being followed around the shops, or how you have to dress if you're going to certain places, or how you dress differently if you're going to certain places, just because you don't want to attract that attention. And I think some of those behaviors are learned behaviors within the black community for a number of reasons. Most likely for self-protection. It's something I speak about. When I go into shops, I never have my hands in my pockets. I always stop. If I'm going into a mall or a big department store, I stop at the security cameras and look at the camera as though just to say to the guy sitting wherever he is, I'm here. I'm not trying to hide from you. I'm not trying to hide anything. And these, just some of these small instances, just kind of shows how we, as members of the black community, have to curb our own behaviors in not drawing attention, or in an effort to show our innocence, because we know from the time we step in your door, we're assumed guilty. And that speaks to some of our cultural behaviors, but to a bigger picture. And I'm with you in that, why did it take 2020? Why did it take a pandemic and George Floyd to some of our closest friends to recognize what we've been doing, what we've been having to cope with, what our community has been complaining about? And for me, if we get anything out of 2020, if we get anything out of our continued conversations in 2021 or just this series, it's an understanding from the wider communities as to what we've been dealing with, and a recognizing from them as to why did it take this for you to take notice.
Chaka, it's not even you being paranoid. It's actually a real thing. Like, if you shared that story like you're sharing now, when you walk into a store, people can't quite believe it. And it's not because you're being paranoid. It's actually a real thing. Like, when I go on a flight, I know if I wear a tracksuit, I'm going to get stopped. And I get stopped in the most ridiculous places. I don't even share most of the story. Sometimes I do, but like, I've been stopped when I'm about to walk on the flight, and I've had someone grab me by the arm and walk me off the flight, and everybody's staring at me like I'm a criminal. And then they start going through my stuff. And it's not even, I know the immigration that are doing their job, but I'm talking when it's not even in that moment. And I don't share these stories all the time because it's like, but why? So then I think, well, I just want to say peace. So I'm going to dress a little bit nicer when I'm flying on a 12-hour flight from LA. Who really wants to dress in a nice outfit? You want to be in your pajamas and a tracksuit.
Yeah, you want to be covered, right?
Right? You have to think, well, actually, and it's something you actually don't even realize you have to do, but you do.
Yeah, and I mean, just echoing that sentiment too, Shaka and I have shared our experiences a number of times as well from ESPN. Like, obviously growing up in Jamaica and Shaka in Trinidad, I was saying how we've never really had to be confronted by racism as it is, say, here in England or in the United States. You know, I've never felt like I needed to identify with a certain group until I moved first to the States when I started working with ESPN, and obviously now to England. Now, you know, living in West London too, I've had people ask me if I'm, you know, a dog walker or a babysitter. Uber drivers that pick me up, coming from Lords as well, when I'm covering cricket, they ask me if I'm coming up a shift from behind the bar. Like, they never think journalist or anything, you know? And I feel like before, I would like reluctantly laugh it off and say, LOL, no, I'm actually a journalist. And then they'd be like, oh, wow, blah, blah, blah. And I would entertain it. Now I don't. Now it really does set me off. And I feel like it should have set me off this badly from before. But the George Floyd thing, I think something clicked in all of us, Leanne. For you, what was it? Why did it hurt more? Why has it affected us all like this?
Do you know what? I don't think it's affected me any worse than other situations. I think other people's reactions have has affected me, whether that be good or bad. Because like I said previously, I'm not quite sure why it's taken that for other people to then reach out to me to apologize for something that happened 4 years ago when they didn't stick up for me and myself and Nnamdi Kanu. Why would that be the situation? So am I surprised that this happened? Unfortunately not. I'm not surprised. And it did make me feel sick to my stomach when you see the video of George Floyd. And no matter how many times you see it, it feels worse every single time. But I think for me, the biggest thing has been the reaction of other people, good and bad. Like I said, I think some companies, production companies, have realized, actually, we don't have any diversity on our staff, or whether that be on TV, whether that be in a club. I mean, if you look at the women's WSL in England, the Women's Football League, professional league, there's hardly any ethnic minority players. How can that be? How can there only be about three players of colour in the league? That does not make any sense. That can't be right. Managers, coaching, people are not willing to even go for a job because they know they're not going to get it. Whereas now I think people are finally realising, actually, we do need more diversity. I do think some companies are doing it to tick a box. But at this moment in time, we will take it. And it gives people the opportunity to go for these jobs, because in previous time, people haven't had the ability to even go for it because you just think, well, I'm not going to get it. And that's not how I've been raised. You know, I've been very lucky. I've been a professional footballer since I was 14 years old. I love my life. You know, I don't like negativity, but I just think other people, it's finally made other people wake up as to what it is to walk a day in the life of people like us.
And let me, I'll counter that, Leanne, in that the George Floyd murder affected me deeply. And just as the father of five black children, I started an organization, so recently Red Card, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year, almost as a promise to deliver a better world to my kids. And then all of a sudden, 2020 happened, and the George Floyd murder played off in front of our eyes on every screen that was available to us. And my initial reaction to that was a feeling that I had failed in the most basic of promises to my children. And that was hard for me to accept. I then had a conversation with Leroy Rossinia, former black footballer, black manager, himself, who said, we have to see this as a relay. We're handing the baton off to the next generation. And we have to hand it off in the best possible position that we can. And give them the confidence and the tools that they need to run the next leg and hope that that next leg is the last. And I say that in asking you, Leanne, given your own career as a footballer, given the next steps that you're taking in working with the media and the barriers that you continue to break down, do you feel an added responsibility in how you address or react to either personal incidents, experiences of your own, or to wider issues that, we're discussing? Do you feel a greater responsibility as a trailblazer? Do you, in recognizing that the path that you're blazing for a young girl somewhere in the world that you may never meet, is that something that plays, that comes into your mind?
Yeah, I think so. I've been very fortunate to have been raised with integrity, in the sense that, like, I am very much like, my mum and dad believe in everything that I do. We have conversations, open and honest conversations, but I'm a big believer in integrity. And what I've realized is a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is going to be very selfless things. So I'm going to put myself out there. And at times I think it's cost me opportunities. You know, I think it's cost me my England career being outspoken. I think things like that, but I have to be okay with that. And I sleep at night knowing that I've done the right thing. Now, I'm not perfect, nobody is, but I do think that being a trailblazer, you almost become selfless even more, because you're like, I'm doing all this work for the opportunity for a younger girl, like your daughters, like anybody's daughter, even a son, to be able to be in a position where, you know, they can look at me and think, similar to Kamala Harris, you know, that could be me one day. And I think that is what keeps me going. For all the abuse that I get from people on social media and different things, it will not stop me. Yes, it's hurtful at times, but at the same time, it's a small minority of people. I get a lot of people. I had someone message me today saying I saved their life just because I responded to them when they were saying they wasn't feeling very good. Now, that's just a person I've never met in my life. So to reiterate your point, Shaka, there's a lot of people that I can affect, as we all can here today, and use your platform to be able to help people. And that's literally something that I really enjoy doing. And I've noticed that sometimes you're not going to get that pat on the back that you might need sometimes. And that's not why I do it. But I think some people realize your work, you're doing more than you realize. Just because they might not say it, they see it. So if I can help anybody, then I can. And I'm just very blessed and lucky that my parents support me 150%. And I'm exactly like them when it comes to integrity.
And full disclosure here, two of the young girls that you affect are two of my own daughters. As I mentioned, I've got five kids, four girls. The youngest two play football. And we were fortunate enough just to bump into you outside Gillette Stadium one summer's day. And thank you very much for that. You have no idea the kind of effect that has on young ladies, as my girls were then. And made me a cool dad for a little while.
that was great.
Didn't last very long. I messed that up somehow, but at least I was cool dad for a little bit. So, for me, thank you very much.
No, I mean, it was my pleasure, because I was saw you walking through the car park and I was like, that's Shaka Hislop. And then I remember I came over and I was like, we're in Boston. I mean, what are the chances in the Patriots car park? So then it was an absolute pleasure of mine. I was like, that's amazing.
And then, Leanne, I mean, just especially for some of those that may not know exactly how you got started, obviously being here in England, and I say unfortunately, like, you had two mountains stacked against you, obviously one being, you know, mixed race as well and having black, but also being a woman, you know, trying to, I mean, there's so many male dominated fields, period, but in sports, in football as well. What was, I guess, a bit of that journey like for you? Because we've spoken, of course, I mean, as Shaka says, he's constantly trying to balance protecting your children from what we know is the disgusting racism that plagues this world, but also trying to make sure that they're aware of it so that they know what to do if and unfortunately when they do encounter it. What was that dynamic like for your mother and father?
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that, because I started playing for a boys' team when I was 5 years old. There was no girls around that played. I was the only girl on an all-boys team. And I was just this young, naive kid that just loved playing football. I didn't see myself any differently. My teammates loved me, but I used to come into contact with a lot of other team people I'd be playing against that would say these horrible comments. Parents on the other team, they would say horrible things that I won't repeat. So I used to hear them and just think, I'm just going to play football. Whereas it did used to affect my mum and dad a lot, because I'm their little girl. Do you know what I mean? I'll always be their little girl. So to hear those things wasn't nice. But I think the positive thing now is that there's more girls that are playing football. There's more females involved in football. And there are women's specific teams. Because when I was growing up, I always knew at the age of 5 years old, I wanted to be a professional footballer. And people say to me, how did you know that? I just knew. And there was not going to be anything that stopped me. But there wasn't even a women's professional league. So when I originally got scouted for Arsenal in Southeast London, I actually got scouted for the boys team, because it wasn't until I got closer, they approached my parents. It was an absolute honour to be scouted for Arsenal boys, but I got closer and they saw my little braid at the back of my hair and they're like, actually, she's a girl. And I could see, they said, because of my ability at that time, because there wasn't any girls playing at the standard that I was at. But my hope was that it doesn't mean it, just because you're good, you should be accepted. Anybody should be able to play. But I just had very thick skin, but it did used to affect my mum and dad a lot, because the things that the parents would say, and they'd come up to me after the game and then have respect for me because I was good, but I just didn't really care, because I was like, I just love playing the game.
It's heartbreaking to hear and recognize that adults, other parents, and what they have to say to a five-year-old on the field, regardless. That is impossible for me to fathom. But a lot of that abuse now has turned online, and we've been having those discussions about a lot of the abuse that Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial, Raheem Sterling have faced. I was on a course similar to this, and speaking with Karen Kearney and the abuse that she has come under because she's a woman commentating on male sport. How has social media impacted some of that abuse, some of the discussions, and what's next in terms of addressing that online abuse?
Yeah, I think obviously I'll give you a bit of background on myself. Like, the more that I'm doing, the more abuse that I seem to get. And obviously a lot of these things are male predominantly followed accounts. That's the truth. The companies that I'm working for. And I think what people don't realize, I've learned to not let it affect me as much, but then there could be a day where you might not be feeling good, you know, and you shouldn't go on your phone. I don't even look at my phone during a show now. If I'm live on air, I don't look at my phone anymore, because I thought it could impact my answers I'm giving. It could make you start to feel, because it does make you feel a little bit sick. Because I get, you know, I'm half black, I'm a woman, and I'm gay. So it's almost like you tick all the wrong boxes, but all the right boxes. So, but at the end of the day, I'm not going anywhere. I think it depends on your circumstance. If it affects your mental health, which it can do, I think that these people, they have nothing better to do but to abuse people like myself and other people. But at the same time, I'm not going to let them win by coming off there. But I can see why some people do, because you have to think, well, what is this doing to impact me? A professional footballer shouldn't be going out to do their job and then coming on and checking their phone and getting abuse, any type of abuse. If you don't think I'm a good player, absolutely fine. But why do you have to talk about my gender, my sexuality, my race? Why do you have to go to those levels? But when they go to those levels, nothing's done about it. So these things affect my mum a lot more, because she'll go on social media and she'll check it and she gets her upset. And I'm like, mum, look, for every 100 tweets you get, you might get 4 that are not good. And this is the problem. You remember those 4 because they're usually pretty bad. So I try to think, actually, I do get a lot of nice messages, but why people feel the need to pick up their phone and attack? If I don't like somebody, not everyone's going to like you, are they, unfortunately? But if I don't like somebody, I'm not going to go and tell them and pick up my phone and think, actually, I'm going to go and tell this person I don't like them, but to the core. And now it's like they have your telephone number, isn't it? It's like giving someone your telephone number, because everybody's creatures of habit. We all check our social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and whatever. But more needs to be done from these companies, because they have enough money to put people in place that can take it away before you've even seen it. If I put up a song, it's taken down straight away if it's not copyright. So why is it that you can be abused and you report it, then you get a generic response that says, it's not harmful or offensive, but it's because it's a computerized response. You couldn't get any more harmful and offensive than the messages that have been sent. So I think there needs to be more done. I know a lot of people disagree, but I do think you should have to have some kind of identification to be on these platforms. I really do. Mm. I don't think you should be able to be anonymous completely, because it's getting out of hand. And now it almost feels like it's becoming a trend. Every weekend, a footballer or a celebrity, it doesn't have to just be a footballer, is getting abused. And it isn't nice.
Do governments have a role to play in that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it also comes down to willingness to want to do more and to change, because it's all very well sending out statements saying we need to do this, we need to do that. But what are you doing behind the scenes? I think a lot of it is lip service, where they say we need to do this, we need to do that. We'll do something then. What more needs to happen before something is done? Because I don't want the players to have to come off of social media, but that's what's going to happen, because I don't go on my social media anywhere near as much as I did, because I'm like, I don't want to see people writing mean things to me. If you don't like me, like I said, if you don't like me as a pundit, you're absolutely fine to your opinion. But why do you have to take it to the levels that you do? So the government and the governing bodies need to do way more than they are, because it shouldn't need for it to come to the way it's got to now, out of hand almost, for something to be done.
And I mean, it takes, like you said, it takes one thing for you to not like the way somebody plays, or, you know, a comment that they've made on television, to actually pick up your phone and go to a total stranger, because that's exactly what majority of these people are, and tell them you don't like them. But it also takes an extra darker place to go when you feel like the way that you counteract this person's play, or I suppose attack them, is takes you to a homophobic, a racist, and a sexist place. Do you feel like now we're seeing more incidents of racism, homophobia, and sexism? Or is it just because now these social media platforms have given them that platform?
I think it's a whole, I don't want to get into politics, but I think when you've got leaders in the position of power in the world that are outrightly racist and homophobic in the things that they say, it almost gives people the right to think they can say that too. Now, yeah. Is it, I always say, you're not born racist, you're not born homophobic, this is taught. And you can't stop people from saying these things that they've been taught inside their own home. Just because there's campaigns and stuff, there's only so much you can do. Maybe you can try to change people's perceptions of someone like me. And I'll give you one example. I went to Qatar. I've been there twice. One of the best experiences of my life. If I'd have listened to people, I never would have gone there. Because people were saying, well, they don't like people like you there. They don't like people like you. What are you going to do? If I got there and people were mean to me, I would have left straight away. What the people were abusing me, from some people from the LGBTQ community, were saying to me, why are you going there? You're going against us. Well, did they see that I'm in the Khalifa Stadium running a football camp for about 100 girls? That was never been done before. I'm meeting with people in Qatar that people like me, they say, don't get anywhere near them. But you have to sometimes be able to willing to put yourself out there to change people's perceptions of what people like me are. That's not putting myself in danger, but you have to do what you've got to do. So at the end of the day, there are these people in the world. You cannot, like I said, you are not born racist, homophobic, and prejudiced. Unfortunately, people are. But I do think that with regards to people being more outwardly spoken about it, it's always been there. People often say, you know, oh, America's this. I've lived in America for 10 years. I absolutely love it. I love where I'm from in England, but I love America. It changed my life moving to America. It really did, for the better. And I think sometimes in England, people often say, we don't have that in our country. We don't have that in England. It doesn't exist in England. Well, what happened when like Aubameyang got a banana thrown at him? That was in England. So these things are happening. So more needs to be done about it. But like I said, it's a hard one, because what can you do when people are having these ideas and thinking they can bring them and say them? And this goes back to on the social media. If you're allowed to be anonymous, then people can say whatever they want, because nothing's going to be done. Heavier fines, police getting involved and stuff like that. It has to happen. It sounds extreme, but it does.
And I mean, one of the things too, I mean, just hearing you speak, and obviously all of us come from, you know, sports, I suppose, as a background, although I obviously was nowhere near the levels that you guys have gotten to being representing your countries. But one of the things that we hear so much as well, just as working at ESPN, whenever people try to take a stand against the social injustices that we see happening in the world, is, you know, shut up and stick to sports, that kind of thing. And we've seen it even happen here with Marcus Rashford, who, because he dared to stop children from going hungry, people just said, just shut up and kick the ball, just entertain me. But we have still seen how it's only when the likes of you, the likes of Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling come out in the States, you see LeBron James constantly just being brave enough to not hold his tongue, lead NBA players off. And we use the NBA as almost like such a focal point for what should be done sometimes. Why do you think sports is just such a perfect, I suppose, I guess, vehicle in this fight?
Because everybody loves sports, don't they? I mean, in England, it's more or less our religion, isn't it? And if you look at the likes of Colin Kaepernick, he was way ahead of the game. You know, he was taking the knee from 3 or 4 years ago, and he was completely ostracized during that time. Now, I'm not saying that I'm Colin Kaepernick, but I know exactly how that feels to be, you know, to tell the truth and to be made to feel like you're the one that's in the wrong. And that's literally what happened to me and any other Aluka with the FA situation. You know, we told the truth and we were made to feel like we were in the wrong. But I do think when it comes to sports, everybody loves sports. Footballers are often held on a completely different pedestal, right or wrong. You know, footballers sometimes can't do anything right, or and because of the people often think about the money that they have. But I do think that in America, people do take a stand more. I think that with regards to with their teammates, I think there's more empathy. And obviously, America's a much bigger country. But I think that when it comes to sports, I just think it's a place where people can go and they should feel comfortable and they should feel like they can relate to players. Because whether somebody's black, white, mixed race, you know, Asian, it shouldn't matter. That is somebody that they look up to and that's something should stand. But it should be also go away from the sporting arena. People should think about the wordings that they use, because I've been at games before and people have actually said homophobic things and I don't even think they realize. And that comes down to education, because for me, I'm like, how can you not realize what you're saying is offensive? And it puts me in a difficult situation, because then I'm like, I should go and report them to the person, but then they don't think they're being offensive. But I can't sit there and have an hour chat about how uneducated they are. Do you know what I mean? But it comes down to lack of education, starting in the school system, having these conversations about race, gender, sexism and stuff like that. And it can educate the children so that they can grow and they can realize that it can't happen.
You mentioned Colin Kaepernick, Leanne, and him being ahead of his time 4.5 years ago. We've seen the Premier League players take a knee, wear the Black Lives Matter patches on their arms. Now, I've heard both sides of the argument from people I have immense respect for about continuing to take the knee, or we need to stop now. What's your opinion on the act and what's next?
Yeah, I think for many, many years, a lot of the players have often worn T-shirts. We've seen, you know, kick racism out of football. You wear a T-shirt just for one day and then you kind of don't really know what it stands for, and then you just go home. What I like about taking a knee is that I think it's quite powerful, because I think the black players feel like they're unified and there's no longer a separation. And I think that what are the solutions? Because I've heard certain teams have not taken a knee and they say, well, you know, it's just taking a knee, it's wearing a badge. But what if you don't have a solution to the problem? Then what are we supposed to do? I do think it's really powerful when you see the players, you know, taking a knee, closing their eyes, feeling like they're not alone. Is it going to continue for the next 5 years? I don't think that's reasonably possible, but I do think it's good that it's continuing. I really do. But at the end of the day, what more can people do? Yes, it's more than wearing a badge on your. I wear one and I absolutely proudly wear one, and I'll continue to wear one even if the campaign's not going. But what is the solution? You know, Shaka, what is the solution to the issue that there is at hand? People need to realize that this can't go on. And I do think that in the last 6 months, people do realize what we've been through. I think it's been very powerful. I really do. Because I think, like I said, when people don't want to take a knee, I would have a hard time. I genuinely would. I respect absolutely everybody's opinion, 100%, just to make that first and foremost. But if I'm on a team where people are not taking a knee, I'm going to be in the dressing room thinking, what is going on here? I feel like you're going against me. And I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen on the US Women's National Team. And I know all those girls, 99% of them, have nothing against any of them. They're good friends of mine. But if I saw a teammate of mine not taking a knee, I would find that quite hard.
No, I completely agree with that one as well. And then now just bringing it to the Premier League as well. I think you came back home, of course, because of COVID, just right at the perfect time where the wheels started churning about what can something like the Premier League do on the back of what we were seeing, especially going on in the USA. how happy are you with what we've seen so far, and how much more needs to be done? Because as we understand, I mean, all three of us understand that we've probably been trying to fight this individually, internally on our own. And you, of course, publicly way before this happened. So we know it's not going to be fixed overnight. We're not going to suddenly educate and eradicate all of racism overnight. But how happy are you with it, at least suppose this season now that we're halfway through?
Yeah, I think for me personally, it's good to not feel alone, because I think sometimes when I've spoken out, I've been considered a rebel or something like that, when I'm actually just speaking out because that's what you should do and something's not correct. It's not because you're a rebel, it's just because of how it is. So for me personally, as I'm sure for all of us, it's quite draining, isn't it, talking about this? Because it's something that brings, it triggers you, it brings things up from years and years of stuff we spoke about at the beginning of the show, being followed around the shop and stuff like that. Like, you just learn to deal with it. But the good thing about it now is that I feel like people understand what it feels to walk a day in the life of people like us. And that makes me feel quite good about myself to know. It shouldn't have taken the murdering of George Floyd for that to be the case. But we have to see the progression that's been made. And I do think people have woken up. Unfortunately, you can't change people like with things they're going to say on social media. You can eradicate them by getting them off of those platforms, but you can't change them. But I think we do have to be positive, a little bit positive, about where we've come in this time, because I do see a difference and I do see a change. And even when I put my TV on, I do see more people that look like me, and it feels great.
Mm. It does feel great.
I think that's so important. If you can't see it, you can't be it, is your cliche in terms of representation. And that's important, regardless of who you are, how you identify, recognizing yourself on that television screen, on that field is an important stride forward, and one, Leanne, that you represent so well in so many different ways, and with the integrity and the strength and the bravery that you do it. Thank you very much for that.
No, thank you.
I was gonna say, I mean, for a woman, you've got the cojones, which is what I absolutely love. And I think that's definitely something that I suppose, I mean, we've spoken to a couple of footballers already, you know, about this. And I know a couple of them that have shied away from talking about this. And it's not because I don't think that they have the strength to, but because it's funny, because we spoke to Anton Ferdinand about this a couple of weeks ago. And it brings it back to the point that you just brought up, how he was the victim in a racist incident. And somehow he got all the abuse, as if...
Well, you know, it's funny, I know Anton really well, and I actually did a show with him last week. And when I watched his documentary, it really triggered me. I was actually crying, because it made me, I completely... You know when someone says, I know how you feel? Sometimes people don't, they just say it. I genuinely felt him, because I was thinking... But the difference is, and my dad made this point to me the other day, I dealt with it there and then. He's not dealt with it there and then, but we both still felt the same. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So there's no right or wrong. And I completely understand why he didn't deal with it there and then necessarily, because he's a professional footballer in amongst a professional environment where they're kind of shutting him down when he's trying to do anything about it. Whereas I almost had to, like, I haven't retired, but I almost had to remove myself from those situations to be able to have a voice. And thankfully now I'm on TV shows. I'm able to speak freely and just be myself, as opposed to when I'm playing in England or when I'm on a team, they say, you know, it's like, Shaka, you can and can't say this. Don't do this, don't do that. They're putting up a board after a game saying bullet points, don't say this. And that's hard for me, because I'm an adult. So I just think that with regards to Anton as well, like, he's also brave coming out now, but it makes me sad how much it's impacted his mental health, because you can see it in him. And that really upset me, because I completely know how he was feeling, because for about a year before myself and Eliana Raluca went to the House of Commons to deal with the situation, everybody was saying we were liars. And that was horrible. So imagine, like, I'm crying at night time. Those are the things that people don't see. Those are the things that people don't see. So, you know, yes, I feel like I'm a strong person, but I'm also a human. So yeah. I it affects me as well, you know?
Listen, I think those traumas are very real, whether you recognize it in the moment or after the fact. Just kind of having spent the number of years that I did in those environments, You at times when it's happening, you want to feel, well, you know, I have to take it. I'm strong enough. I have to prove my alphaness, if that's a word. And it's only, and I'll speak personally here. it's only after you retire, I think you start to recognize some of those traumas. And for me, that certainly has been the case, and that certainly has been the case over the last 12 months, which is why, again, I give so much credit to the Rashfords, the Greenwoods, the Sterlings, of dealing with these issues in real time. One, it benefits them long-term personally in not having to relive these traumas later on, as so many of us from previous generations have done. But it highlights the issue and it brings it to the forefront. And it forces us as a community to deal with them there and then in trying to make things better for the next young black footballer coming up, for the next young woman footballer coming through who's playing in a boys' team and having to deal with parents shouting obscenities from the sidelines. Those for me are the big takeaways, but also recognizing.
But Shaka, as well, not to interrupt you, but you are also a trailblazer, because I remember growing up watching you and there wasn't any black goalkeepers. And when you were playing at Newcastle, it's true though. Like, and so we can sit here and like, sometimes people often do work that doesn't get appreciated because times have moved on. There wasn't social media then. But it's true. I used to grow up watching Shaka on the TV. Unfortunately, I remember when you beat Man United 5-1, but we won't go there with that. But it's true, there are a lot of people before me that have trailblazed the way and paved the way as too. And hopefully, you know, we can pass on that baton to the future generation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Leanne, honestly, for just joining us for a chat, just for events, just to share experiences, because this is the whole point of it. This is a conversation that needs to continuously be had, not just for everyone else's benefit, to educate other races about some of our experiences, but also for us to, you know, as a way of healing and as a way of picking ourselves up and getting ready for the next day of fighting, because we know that this is a fight that's far from over, but I feel like we're definitely onto something special here.
Leanne, I'd like to double down on that and thank you on so many levels, for not just your time here, but your efforts. We spoke about Gillette Stadium, but more to the point, for your continued efforts, your honesty, speaking your truth, in recognizing how much this means, not just to young women footballers, not just to the LGBTQ community, but so many of our marginalized peoples who continue to struggle from day to day, and recognizing who you are, the strength that you bring, the truth that you bring, and the effect that it will have for a long time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. It's not often I'm left speechless, but you're making me want to, you're making me get emotional. Honestly, thank you. It really means a lot.
We see you.
It means a lot to me, because I think sometimes people don't often tell me, you know, my mum and dad do, my friends do, but it means a lot coming from you guys. So I appreciate that. I really do. Thanks for having me.
That wraps this episode of The Conversation. Massive thanks to Leanne for bringing the vibes and speaking her truth. But we won't stop there. Join us again as we continue to see how the sporting world is leading this fight against racism and social injustice in another episode of The Conversation.